Blog Talk Radio.
Internet world, and welcome to the Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. Welcome to the Thursday edition, and thank you once again for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with me on the broadcast. Got a lot of things to cover today, lots of stories to share with you. On today's broadcast, I have a special interview with my wife, Becky Noble, and we're going to talk about the very fiery second debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And we're going to talk about several items, issues related to that, including the betrayal of what we see of the Republican Party as it continues to fragment. And the old adage is, if you can't run with the big boys, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. That's what's happening here. When the heat is turned up by the liberal left, the establishment left, and the media, it seems like our folks want to leave the wounded and want to leave. And we'll get into that whole subject later on. We're also today going to talk about a very famous rape case involving big lawyer, 27-year-old lawyer Hillary Clinton in 1975, when she actually defended a rapist. And in that case, did everything she could to smear the victim. We're going to talk about that case a little bit later on. But this morning, I want to get your attention with a few news items of worthy mention, and especially the case I've been following for the last 7 years, and that is the case of Pakistani Christian woman Asia Bibi. And today was to be the day where she faced the Pakistani Supreme Court and would find out what her sentence would be. She's been on death row for 7 years. The case was suspended about a year ago so that it could be heard by the Pakistani Supreme Court. Today was to be kind of a landmark decision hearing. And you know there are many, many clerics and mobs waiting to see what this court decides, because if they decide against them and release Asia Bibi, there will be a riot and a bloodshed that you couldn't even imagine. And so there's a lot of pressure on these judges. And this one particular judge today recused himself. He claimed that the reason he recused himself was because he was part of the bench in the hearing of the case of Solomon Tizer, and he was related to that case. And so that case was about a politician who was assassinated in 2011 after he spoke out on the behalf of Asia Bibi. His killer, by the way, was sentenced to death by the Pakistani court and executed in February. This particular judge sat on that case. Today, when we were supposed to have a judicial decision in the case of Asia Bibi, or Asia Bibi, he recused himself because of a conflict of interest. So once again, this case has been delayed, and so much pressure on this beautiful young Christian woman and her family. Local Christians have told Open Doors that they were hopeful about Bibi's fate since her case has so many obvious flaws. Leading human rights attorney Asad Jamal, in an interview with The Guardian, said there is absolutely no case against Asia. He says, "I really can't emphasize that enough. It should take no more than 30 minutes to throw the case out." Well, what is this case for those that may not be familiar with Asia? 7 years ago, Asia was picking fruit on a summer morning when she paused for a drink of water at a nearby well. The women she was working with objected, accusing her of contaminating the water because she was a Christian. And they had this argument. During the argument, Bibi asked the women, "I believe in my religion and in Jesus Christ who died on the cross for the sins of mankind. What did your prophet Muhammad ever do to save mankind?" That was her question. And this question made the women furious, and they gathered a local mob, and Bibi was beaten and thrown into prison. Sentenced to death because, according to their so-called blasphemy law in Pakistan, she had said something insulting the Prophet Muhammad. Now, there were several acquittals of Christian pastors in 2013, and this gave the hope that Bibi would be released. Bibi's death sentence was upheld by the Muslim majority court in October 2014. Reigniting again another international disapproval of Pakistan's blasphemy law. Now, last July, the court ruled that until her appeal hearing, Bibi could not be executed. Her attorney, Saif al-Muluk, based the appeal on the argument that the person who brought the case against Bibi, a local cleric, should not have been allowed to do so since he didn't hear the blasphemy firsthand. So, in other words, he's bringing this accusation against Asia Bibi, but he wasn't even akin to what was said. He wasn't there when it happened. So, in addition, what even makes this case more flawed is that the report, the accusation, was filed 5 days after the quarrel. Why not as soon as possible? Why did they wait 5 days? Because she's a Christian, and because Christians in Pakistan are discriminated against, and the Pakistanis, the locals, sometimes use the blasphemy laws against each other, but especially against Christians because they hate them. Now, in previous cases, judges threw out the death sentence for a defendant because 3 hours had lapsed between the offense and the first report made. Now, the Pakistani law holds that the time lapse smacks of premeditation, according to the American Center for Law and Justice. In an unusual move, Muluk chose to argue Bibi's case not under the secular law, but under Islamic law. Now, what we're going to do here is we're going to monitor this and keep very, very abreast of all the latest information. Now, this is a very complex law, this blasphemy law, and the law really doesn't specifically define what blasphemy is, so sometimes in this case, presenting evidence can really, really be tricky. If found guilty, defendants like Asia Bibi can be put to death, can be hung. And so in the last count on this case, more than 1 million people worldwide have signed multiple petitions asking the Pakistani governments to release Bibi. Those countries are Italy, France, and Spain, and they have offered Asia Bibi asylum. So it is a very dangerous place where Asia Bibi is living. It ranks number 6 on the Open Door Persecuted Watch List, where it's the hardest place in the world to be a Christian. What I really urge all of our listeners to do. Can you sign the petitions? They are being heard. They are being delivered to the Pakistani government. Second of all, and most important, keep Asiya Bibi in your prayers. It is urgent. This is a matter of life and death for a young Christian mother with two children that so desperately wants to be reunited with her family. If, by a miracle, she is acquitted, she will have to seek asylum in another country because the angry mob in Pakistan, the radical Islamists, will surely want to kill her. They will not accept the court's decision. And those who have spoken in favor of Asiya Bibi or tried to change the blasphemy laws have been assassinated. This brave, courageous woman has seen so much in the last 7.5 years of her imprisonment. And she needs our thoughts and our prayers continuously. She has suffered so much, medically speaking, physically speaking, and she is still alive by the grace of God. So let's continue to hold up Asiya Bibi in prayer, and I will definitely keep you informed on any changes. We're thankful for this day that there has been a delay, but again, remember, it is a pressure on her that's just unbelievable, and on her family who are anxiously waiting for some good news. So once again, the court case has been delayed, and I will keep you updated. This month, as I have mentioned on the last broadcast, is a very, very painful month for me and for human rights activists really literally all over the world, but especially for Sholeh Pakravan. Sholeh Pakravan is the mother of Rehane Jabari. Rehane Jabari defended herself against a rape attack in 2007, and she supposedly, of course, this is very difficult to come to any conclusion on. She stabbed him, but the stab wound in the location should not have caused his death. But at any rate, this man died as a result of his stab wound. He was a former intelligence agent. Now, I started to follow this case in 2014 and became fascinated with this case. Rehane Jabari was sentenced to death for defending herself against a rape attack. This is in Iran. This is Sharia law. This is what life is like, particularly because he was a former intelligence agent. Well, 2 years ago, on October 25th, 2014, Rehane was hung by the court of Tehran. She was executed. It was because of this incredible case that I was drawn to it so deeply and so personally that I've written a book that was published back in March called Rehane, A Beautiful Fragrance, and it's just been an honor to be Rehane's voice through this entire ordeal for her family and friends all over the world. Well, her mother, of course, this is a reminder this month of 2 years ago that she lost her precious daughter, hanged in Iran, for simply defending herself against a rape attack. Well, Sholeh Pakravan, of course, is against the death penalty because she is part of a group of mothers in Iran. They gather together and they kind of support each other. These are mothers that have lost their sons or daughters to execution under this evil Iranian regime. Well, just a couple of days ago, on World Death Penalty Day, speaking out against the death penalty, Rehane Jabari's mother, Sholeh, was very outspoken and published a letter wanting to abolish the death penalty in Iran. And what I would like to do is read this report to you and maybe give you a sense of her feelings and her emotions at this time. Rehane Jabari, who was hanged in October 2014 for defending herself against an assault by a member of the Iranian regime's intelligence, has pledged to fight for abolishment of the death sentence in Iran. In a letter published in news networks, Mrs. Sholeh Pakravan wrote, quote, "It's now 2 years full of ups and downs since Rehane was executed. Today, I hate the death penalty even more. 2 years ago, I was totally focusing on preventing Rehane from being executed. Today, however, I'm living with the hope for an Iran without the death sentence. I'm not afraid of anything for taking this path. I'm looking for the demon death sentence right in the eye, waiting for the right time to deliver it the final blow. So at the gallows, they will be regulated in the future like museums." In reference to children killed in Iran while playing by hanging themselves, following watching public hangings in the street, she added, instead of execution game, let our children play life game. I understand every second the survivors of an execution go through. I understand the meaning of responsibility, and I knowingly accept it. She continued, I can't stand to see the youth, like my own children, mourning the loss of their executed sisters or brothers. I can't stand to witness the tears shed by fathers and mothers for their executed children. Sholi concluded by saying, I can't stand to see a human struggling in midair, and then the dead body be wrapped in a cover and sent to the cemetery. I shout with all my heart, no execution. And of course, that's Sholi Pakravan. You can see pictures all over Facebook of when there are public executions and hangings in Iran. They hang them from boom cranes, and you can see their lifeless bodies dangling from these cables. It's horrifying, but this is what they do in Iran. This is because this is international. This is the kind of law in Iran that even punishes juveniles below the age of 18. Even though Iran has signed signatory covenants pledging not to execute juveniles, they continue to skirt this and still do it. And in some ways, what they do is they arrest these children, 15, 16 years old, and then they wait till they turn the legal age, and then they participate in the execution. But they find ways to skirt around their commitments. They find ways to continue to abuse human beings at that level, and it's horrifying. So I applaud my dear friend, and what a courageous friend she is, Sholi Pakravan. In fact, on Tuesday, October 25th, on the Cross in the Desert, I will once again have a very, very special tribute program to Rahane Rajabari. It's simply called Remembering Rahane, and I will read some quotes from my book and have special guests call in, and we will talk about Rahane and do our best to bring hope and healing and comfort to the Jabari family and all of her family and friends all over the world. Well, continuing with the news in Iran, this one is unbelievable. It's about the chess match that is supposed to take place in Iran. I want to read this to you because you have to hear it just to believe it. Quote, one town's very like another, says lyrics in the musical Chess. When your head's down over your pieces, brother, that is probably not the case when your head has an unfamiliar, unwanted piece of cloth draped over it because of the town and the country you are in and because you are a woman. So you have to wonder what and whether world chess officials were thinking when they decided to hold next year's Women's World Championship in Tehran, where the Islamic Republic commands all women to wear the headscarves that its interpretation of the Islamic law requires. Nazi Paradisky, who grew up in the former Soviet Republic of Georgia and now plays as an American, announced that she would refuse to participate, quote, even if it means missing one of the most important competitions of my career. Mrs. Paduski has expressed her position both in terms of her own rights and as a refusal to support the oppression of Iranian women. Both are good reasons. No one should be required to submit to such laws, such as the compulsory hijab, as a condition of participating in a global competition. And such submission would be construed as condoning the tyranny that imposes that law on its citizens. The question is not the hijab. The question is freedom. Those women for whom the hijab is a genuine expression of personal faith, they have every right to wear it. But no one has the right to impose it on women who do not believe in it. There may be only one thing that could redeem this. A spokesman for the World Chess Federation said that it was reviewing all possible solutions for the players' comfort and will discuss all the issues with the organizers in Iran during meetings in the next few weeks. If somehow the chess players can go to Iran without having to wear the hijab, that might be a crack in the Islamic Republic's oppressive regime. Well, the hijab law, of course, is enforced truly on those that live there, that are citizens there. And I wrote a book called The Rose of Nowruz a few years ago dealing with this particular law. It's a novel. It's the story of a woman freedom fighter who stands up for her friends against this law because they have a right to believe and to wear the clothes they choose. And this is a law that is mandatory. If the Gashti Irshad or the morality police catches a woman in public with improper hijab, that is with skin showing and hair showing, she can be fined and she can be taken to jail and she can even be publicly flogged. So this is a horrible issue, a horrible infringement on women's rights who desire so much to have the freedom that you and I desperately have every day, I should say. This final story coming out of Iran, her name is Zainab Sekhanvand. And I wanted to talk to you. This is an article from the BBC. And I want to read this to you because child brides, this is a practice all over the world. Particularly in Iran, they do it as much as they do it in other Islamic countries. But I want to talk to you about the case of Zainab Sekhanvand. Zainab Sekhanvand was convicted of killing her husband, whom she says beat her for months. Her execution was postponed after she remarried in prison and conceived a child. Last month, she gave birth to a stillborn baby, putting her at risk of death by hanging as soon as the 13th of October. That's today. Doctors said the young woman's baby died in her womb 2 days before she gave birth as a result of the shock she suffered after her friend and cellmate was executed. Now, Amnesty International says Mrs. Sekhanvand comes from a poor, conservative Iranian Kurdish family, and she ran away from home at age 15 to marry her first husband, Hussein Sarmadi. She said she saw marrying him as her only chance for a better life. But not long after their wedding, she said, he started beating her regularly and verbally abusing her. The young woman, Zainab, registered several police complaints against her husband, none of which was ever investigated. Her husband rejected her request for a divorce, and when she tried to return to her parents, they disowned her for eloping in the first place. Ms. Sekhanvand was 17 years old when her husband died. She was arrested and allegedly confessed to stabbing him to death. She said she was held at the police station for the next 20 days and repeatedly tortured by police officers. Before being convicted by criminal court in the Western province, she retracted her confession and told the judge that her husband's brother, who she said had repeatedly raped her, he had committed the murder. Mrs. Sekhanvand said he promised to pardon her if she took the blame. An Islamic law allows a murdered victim's family to accept money in lieu of execution. That is called blood money or gasis. Now, Iranian judges can spare under 18 the death penalties if they do not understand the nature of their offense. And this was not investigated in Zainab's case, although an official examination found she was suffering from a depressive disorder characterized by insomnia and difficulty in making decisions. In 2015, Zainab married a fellow prisoner at the central prison in northern Iran and became president. Her execution was delayed until after her birth, as it's illegal to execute a pregnant woman in Iran. Now, Human Rights Watch says that as a party to the Convention on the Rights of the Child, Iran is obliged to outlaw death sentences for minors. According to Amnesty, Iran has executed at least one person convicted for an offense when they were a child in 2016 and has at least 49 more child offenders on death row. This is a case that is just heartbreaking when you think about it, that this young child bride has been abused and tortured. She did, in many ways, what Rahane did to survive, that she actually stabbed her husband to prevent any more beatings and any more harassments and any more torture. And then, of course, she changed her story. But the point of the matter is that she could be executed on any day now in Iran. So please go to my Facebook page and sign the petition and be a voice for Zainab. This is an issue that is unbelievable. Actually, I talk about it in my book, Prisoner of Her Culture. It's the story of a Pakistani, young, a Muslim Pakistani girl, Sakina, who is forced to marry someone she doesn't want to because of a financial arrangement between the two families. And the story of forced marriages and child brides is heartbreaking. And yet we are looking right at Iran that participates in this particular horrible practice. Well, this is the latest news today for what's happening in Iran and in Pakistan. And what I want to do now is I want to take a short break and come back. We're going to turn our attention to the second debate, which was this past Sunday. I want you to hear some brand new music now from Chris Tomlin. This is the title song from his latest CD, Never Lose Sight. This is a song called Jesus. Let's listen on the cross in the desert.
There is a truth older than the ages. There is a promise of things yet to come. There is one born for our salvation, Jesus. There is a light that overwhelms the darkness. There is a kingdom that forever reigns. There is freedom from the chains that bind.
brand new music from Chris Tomlin on his latest CD and project called Never Lose Sight. I want to draw your attention to a slight technical glitch I'm having this morning on the radio. And so I want to explain this because I'm getting ready to play several sound bites. There seems to be a connection disconnect, if you will, with Blog Talk, so that when I actually click on the sound bites, there's a slight delay of about 4 to 5 seconds, which for a broadcaster is kind of a nightmare, if you will. But I want to point that out there. I don't have much control over that today. So when I announce a sound bite, which should come on immediately after I make that announcement, there's going to be a slight delay, which, you know, if you understand from a technical standpoint, you want to have a tight show. You want everything to flow, but that doesn't seem to be the case today. So I want to let you know about that up front. Well, I want to transition right now. It's 10 a.m. on the Cross in the Desert. So happy that if you've joined me this morning, if you have any questions or comments, I always invite my listeners to call in. The number is 1-347-857-2620. 1-347-857-2620. Be glad to take your questions and or comments on today's program. Coming up at 10:30, I have the privilege of interviewing my wife, who is also a Blog Talk radio announcer. Her show, The Conservative Cauldron, can be heard on Fridays at 11 a.m. Central Standard Time. She's a very successful blogger and writer. She writes for Politichicks. And we will talk about the second debate, and we're going to talk about that in some depth for 20, 25 minutes. I want to bring you up to date on the latest dirt and accusations being hurled at Donald Trump. Now, all of a sudden, since the sexual tape came out very, very conveniently a day or so before the debate, now, because of that, and Donald Trump rightly apologized for those crude and lewd remarks, he should have, and he did so. No, none of us who are human rights activists who defend the human rights of women like I do in Iran and Pakistan tolerate that. That's unacceptable. But he did publicly apologize. Now, however, and it seems like the establishment media and everyone else that are trying to destroy his reputation so he can't become president, now the latest innuendo is that he inappropriately touched some women at Trump Towers, or that he walked in on the dressing room of the contestants for a beauty pageant. And so the list goes on, and you know and I know what the corrupt media, who is in bed with Hillary Clinton, is going to do for the next several weeks till this is election day. They're going to find as much mud and dirt as possible to discredit Donald Trump for showing that he is not a man that can hold the office of presidency, that he is not qualified, and they're going to do everything they can because, folks, that's all they have. They have no substance on the real issues that affect you and me. They have no answers for the deepening economic and the problems with immigration. They have no answers in the Clinton camp. So the only thing they know how to do, because they're scared of this man, is to discredit him, to say that he's unqualified, and do everything they can to destroy him before Election Day. And you see, if you and I sit back and just throw in the towel and let them do it, then that's a vote for Hillary Clinton, and she will be the next commander-in-chief, and it will be the disaster of the century for our country. What you and I need to do is to stand up, to stand up for truth, to stand up for the security of our country, to stand up for the future of our nation. And I wanted to share with you something that my good friend Cindy Martin Morgan has written, and now I hope I can find it. Yes, here it is. She's my good friend. She and her husband Rick were on the program talking about pro-life issues about a month ago. Here is what Cindy Martin Morgan just wrote on her Facebook status a day or so ago. History repeats itself. The divided Republican Party and the corrupt mainstream Obama-Clinton media will yet again be responsible for destroying America's opportunity to have smaller government, safe borders, a strong military, religious liberties, freedom of speech, lower taxes, our health care nightmare reversed, unborn children protected, and a tsunami of Muslim immigrants that will be impossible to vet. Make no mistake, our children and grandchildren will be subjected to more danger, outrageous types of evil than they have ever known. The affairs of men rest in God's hands. His purposes will prevail, but man still is responsible for his shameful choices. God help those who bring this wickedness upon us. Well put and well written by Cindy Martin Morgan. Well, if you were like me and I was at work, I spent a little time on my break to sneak in with what time I had and watch the presidential debate here in my homeland, here in my territory, right here in St. Louis. And Donald Trump, with his back against the wall and the accusations and the incredible pressure, came out fighting. And I tell you, he won that debate. He publicly apologized and then took the issues and exposed Hillary Clinton for exactly who she is. And I want you to hear one of the most famous lines in the debate right now on The Cross in the Desert. Let's listen.
You know, it is... It's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Yeah. Because you'd be in jail.
Secretary Clinton.
I can't tell you how perfect the timing was on that. She is one of these people that steps right into her own problems. She stepped right into that. She deserved that answer. All the time, Donald Trump is being questioned on his temperament, his competency. Well, you know Donald Trump is a fighter. He's not going to take that sitting down. And so after this remark about his impropriety, his statements on the video, Mr. Trump took the case and labeled it just as it should be. That the real war on women is not Donald Trump, but Bill and Hillary Clinton. And let's listen to this exchange from the debate on Sunday.
Far worse, minor words, and his was action. His was what he's done to women. There's never been anybody in the history of politics in this nation that's been so abusive to women. So you can say any way you want to say it. But Bill Clinton was abusive to women. Hillary Clinton attacked those same women and attacked them viciously. Four of them here tonight. One of the women, who is a wonderful woman, at 12 years old, was raped at 12. Her client, she represented, got him off, and she's seen laughing on two separate occasions, laughing at the girl who was raped. Kathy Shelton, that young woman, is here with us tonight. So don't tell me about words. I apologize for those words. But it is things that people say. But what President Clinton did, he was impeached. He lost his license to practice law. He had to pay an $850,000 fine to one of the women, Paula Jones, who's also here tonight. And I will tell you that when Hillary brings up a point like that, and she talks about words that I said 11 years ago, I think it's disgraceful, and I think she should be ashamed of herself, if you want to know the truth.
Hey, NBC News fans, thanks for checking out our YouTube channel. Subscribe by clicking on that button down here, and click on any of the videos over here to watch the latest interviews, show highlights, and digital exclusives. Thanks for watching.
Well, and that was a classic maneuver, Clinton, right before the debate. He had the four women in a pre-debate interview to be there. Those that Bill Clinton had personally abused, one that claimed that he raped her. And then the young 12-year-old girl, now grown up, of course, many, many years later, 42 years later, Kathy Shelton, I think her name is, she was there to talk about this case, which we're going to talk about a little bit later. So I thought it was a very strategic move to take the accusation against him and to highlight the real war on women is not Donald Trump, but Bill and Hillary Clinton. Bill abused, and Hillary did all she could to trash these women. Threats were made against their lives. They still live in fear today. But what I'm trying to say is if you look at the real disgraceful treatment of women, it is not Donald Trump, but it is both Bill and Hillary Clinton. And in the debate, Mr. Trump, in a classic move, said publicly that if he's elected president, and this is very important, that he is going to prosecute Hillary Clinton for her
crime. I didn't
think
I'd say this, but I'm going to say it, and I hate to say it, but if I win, I am going to instruct my attorney general to get a special prosecutor to look into your situation, because there has never been so many lies, so much deception. There has never been anything like it, and we're going to have a special prosecutor. When I speak, I go out and speak. The people of this country are furious. In my opinion, the people that have been long-term workers at the FBI are furious. There has never been anything like this where emails and you get a subpoena. You get a subpoena, and after getting the subpoena, you delete 33,000 emails. And then you acid wash them, or bleach them, as you would say, a very expensive process. So we're going to get a special prosecutor, and we're going to look into it, because you know what? People have been, their lives have been destroyed for doing one-fifth of what you've done, and it's a disgrace. And honestly, you ought to be ashamed of yourself.
You know, it is, it's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Yeah. Because you'd be in jail.
Secretary Clinton.
A classic, classic moment in that debate here from Washington University. I have heard the hue and cry of some that say, well, that's not constitutional. He could never pull that off. But the attorney general has very large leeway. Hillary was exonerated from a crime that anyone else prosecuted and jailed for. And there are different examples of this that prove the point. The FBI, probably because of the Clinton influence, because of the media, because the fact that she's running for president, was not taken into account. She was not prosecuted for a crime that any of us, any other human being, would have been prosecuted and jailed for. And yet, and the entire nation knows this, the entire nation understands that the Clinton name somehow resonates, I'm not guilty, and you can't prosecute me, you can't put me away, that somehow they're above the law. The majority of the nation understands this. And so Donald Trump, as an advocate for the American people, for truth, for justice, has pledged that he will do this. I believe he will do it just as much as he pledges he will build the wall. And so, of course, because of that claim and threat, they will do everything they can to silence his voice. I want you to hear this next exchange. This is a classic moment where Donald Trump brings up the issue of the deleted emails, and you will love this exchange. We're going to listen to it right now.
Because you'd be in jail.
Secretary Clinton.
We want to remind the audience to please not talk out loud. Please do not applaud. You're just wasting time.
And Secretary Clinton, I do want to follow up on emails. You've said your handling of your emails was a mistake. You disagreed with FBI Director James Comey, calling your handling of classified information, quote, extremely careless. The FBI said that there were 110 classified emails that were exchanged, 8 of which were top secret, and that it was possible hostile actors did gain access to those emails. You don't call that extremely careless?
Well, Martha, first let me say, and I've said it before, but I'll repeat it because I want everyone to hear it, that was a mistake, and I take responsibility for using a personal email account. Obviously, if I were to do it over again, I would not. I'm not making any excuses. It was a mistake, and I am very sorry about that. But I think it's also important to point out where there are some misleading accusations from critics and others. After a year-long investigation, there is no evidence that anyone hacked the server I was using, and there is no evidence that anyone can point to at all. Anyone who says otherwise has no basis that any classified material ended up in the wrong hands. I take classified materials very seriously. and always have. When I was on the Senate Armed Services Committee, I was privy to a lot of classified material. Obviously, as Secretary of State, I had some of the most important secrets that we possess, such as going after bin Laden. So I am very committed to taking classified information seriously. And as I said, there is no evidence that any classified information ended up in the wrong hands.
Okay, we're going to move on.
And yet, she didn't know the word, the letter C on a document, right? She didn't even know what that word, what that letter meant. You know, it's amazing. I'm watching Hillary go over facts, and she's going after fact after fact, and she's lying again because she said she, you know, what she did with the emails was fine. You think it was fine to delete 33,000 emails? I don't think so. She said the 33,000 emails had to do with her daughter's wedding, number one, and a yoga class. Well, maybe we'll give three or four or five or something. 33,000 emails deleted. And now she's saying there wasn't anything wrong. And more importantly, that was after getting a subpoena. That wasn't before. That was after. She got it from the United States Congress. And I'll be honest, I am so disappointed in congressmen, including Republicans, for allowing this to happen. Our Justice Department, where her husband goes onto the back of an airplane for 39 minutes, talks to the Attorney General days before a ruling is going to be made on her case. But for you to say that there was nothing wrong with you deleting 39,000 emails, again, you should be ashamed of yourself. What you did, and this is after getting a subpoena from the United States Congress.
We have to move on. Secretary Clinton, you can respond, then we got to move on.
We want to give the audience a chance
here. You'd be put in jail, let alone after getting a subpoena from the United States Congress.
Secretary Clinton, you can respond, then we have to move on to an audience question.
Look, it's just not true, and so please
go. Oh, you didn't delete them?
Allow her to respond, please.
Personal emails, not official.
33,000?
Not, well, we turned over 35,000, so.
Oh, yeah. What about the other 15,000?
Please allow her to respond. She didn't talk while you talked.
Yes, that's true. I didn't.
Because you have nothing to say.
In the first debate, and I'm going to try not to in this debate, because I'd like to get to the questions that the people have brought here tonight to talk to us about.
And get off this question.
Okay, Donald, I know you're into big diversion tonight, anything to avoid talking about your campaign and the way it's exploding and the way Republicans are leaving you. But
let's
at least focus on some of the issues that people care about tonight. Let's get to their questions.
We have a question here from Ken Karpowitz. He has a question about health care. Ken?
I'd like to know, Anderson, why aren't you bringing up the emails? I'd like to know. Why aren't you
getting to the
bottom?
We brought up the emails.
No, it hasn't. It hasn't. And it hasn't been finished at all.
Ken Karpowitz has a question.
It's nice to one on three.
Yes, exactly. And Donald Trump is not whining and complaining. He's telling the truth. This is the way the debate format has been running, that it, conveniently at the right time he is interrupted. This happened in the vice presidential debate between Pence and Kane. The same thing happened whenever there is a pressing issue and someone like a Kane or a Clinton finds themselves in the corner, suddenly the debate moderator comes to save them from that moment. And especially this question of deleted emails, right away when Donald tries to make the case to inform the public of really the deception that's going on, we have the moderator, we have to move on, they jump in there and they rescue her. Isn't it just pathetic that the established media, we're talking about the major networks, the Washington Post, the New York Times, on and on and on, are in the corner of Hillary Clinton. And even in the debates, the moderators themselves are biased. They jump right in and they interrupt and they do everything they can to rescue their superhero. And this goes on and on. Well, what I want to do now is move from this fiery debate, of which I believe Donald Trump was the victor. I want you to hear the case. Actually, this is a news package put out by CNN, and actually it was very well done. It is the case of Hillary Clinton in 1975, when as a defense attorney, she defended a man accused of rape. But I want you to hear all of the details. And we talk about the war on women. We talk about the Clinton war on women and so-called Donald Trump's lewd remarks. But as you'll see after you listen to this, the real war on women is not Donald Trump. but Hillary and Bill Clinton. And I want you to hear this special report.
It happened on this stretch of highway in Fayetteville, Arkansas, back in 1975. A 12-year-old girl brutally attacked by a 41-year-old man. They were reportedly in his pickup truck after midnight and parked in a ravine. That's where she says he beat and raped her. The sixth grader ended up in the emergency room. The young lawyer called on to defend the suspect in the case was none other than Hillary Rodham. Just 27, she had moved to Arkansas to be with her then-boyfriend, Bill Clinton. Hillary Rodham was running the legal clinic at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. The defendant, Thomas Alford Taylor, who denied the charge, had requested a woman lawyer. So the judge appointed the future Mrs. Clinton. It would be her first criminal defense case. Malin Gibson was the prosecutor at the time.
The day after she was appointed, in fact, she called me and wanted to know if I could get her unappointed. She didn't want to represent the rapist.
Despite her objections, Clinton immersed herself in Taylor's defense, as she was legally obligated to do. In this affidavit seeking a psychiatric evaluation of the victim and signed Hillary Rodham, the rookie lawyer painted the victim as emotionally unstable, suggesting she'd brought false accusations like this before, that she fantasized about older men, and that experts say children like the victim tend to exaggerate or romanticize sexual experiences. CNN contributor Josh Rogan interviewed the victim, now in her 50s, back in 2014, nearly four decades after the crime. The victim said the allegations in the affidavit are untrue, that she'd never romanticized sexual experiences or made any false accusations before.
There's never been any evidence presented by anyone to substantiate the allegations that Hillary Clinton made in that affidavit. To the victim, this was an attempt by Hillary Clinton to smear her in order to exonerate her attacker. The victim believes that Hillary Clinton lied in order to win.
Clinton also insisted on getting her own expert opinion on the accused rapist's underwear after the crime lab had cut out the key part of the sample to test, then lost it.
In a bold move for a first-time defender, Clinton brought what was left of the accused rapist's underwear from Arkansas all the way here to Brooklyn, New York. More than 1,200 miles, just so a renowned forensic expert she'd hunted down could look it over. A move considered aggressive even by the prosecutor's standards. Maybe so, but it worked.
Clinton's expert cast doubt on what was left of the evidence, saying it hardly showed the defendant's blood or semen. The prosecution's case quickly started to unravel.
We began to scramble and consider possibilities of lesser offenses.
The story was mostly forgotten until, in 2014, audio emerged of Clinton talking about the case with an Arkansas journalist back in the 1980s. Listen to her laugh describing the moment she delivered her forensic expert's findings to the prosecutor.
I handed it to Malin Gibson. Well, I'm just getting ready to come from New York to prevent this miscarriage of justice.
Those recordings were played for the victim by Josh Rogan during his interview. Her reaction was anger.
When I heard that tape, I was pretty upset. You lied on me, and you're supposed to be it for women. You call that for women? What you done to me? And I hear you on tape laughing.
There is another piece of audio that Clinton's critics have pointed to for some time. Clinton on the same tape laughing about her client passing a polygraph.
He took a lot of tape. I had to take a polygraph, which he passed. Forever destroyed my faith. But you know what was sad about it was that the prosecutor had evidence.
But whatever evidence the prosecutor had was trumped by Clinton's defense. In fact, even the prosecutor told us Clinton was doing what any good defense attorney would do.
She was just doing her job. She was going to present the best defense she could, and she was certainly going to require us to prove his guilt.
In a plea deal, she got her client's charges reduced from rape to unlawful fondling of a child. For rape, Thomas Taylor could have gone to prison for life. Instead, he was sentenced to 1 year in the county jail. Even that was reduced 2 months for time served. Clinton was asked about the case weeks after her audio tapes emerged during this interview with an online parenting network in Britain.
When you're a lawyer, you often don't have the choice as to who you will represent, and by the very nature of criminal law, there will be those who you represent that you don't approve of, but at least in our system, you have an obligation, and once I was appointed, I fulfilled that obligation.
No matter her explanation, the victim sees it very differently.
She said that the sentence was a miscarriage of justice. In the victim's view, you cannot at once smear a rape victim and then turn around and claim to be a defender or a role model for women.
Yes, and this is the same woman that accepts money, donations to the Clinton Foundation from countries like Saudi Arabia that oppress women, that hate gays and lesbians and will execute them. And as we've been talking about this morning on The Cross in the Desert, the real war on women is the Clinton war on women. I want you to hear what you probably had a hard time hearing in that audio tape from 1975 that Kathy Shelton describes destroyed her life. And this is what Hillary Clinton said in that audio tape recording. It was a fascinating case. It was a very interesting case. This guy was accused of raping a 12-year-old. Of course, he claimed that he didn't and all this stuff. I had him take a polygraph, which he passed, which forever destroyed my faith in polygraphs, she added with a laugh. Clinton can also be heard laughing at several points when discussing the crime lab's accidental destruction of DNA evidence that tied Taylor to the crime. Unbelievable. Now, on Twitter, Kathy Shelton says, I may be Hillary Clinton's first female victim. She ruined my life, defended my rapist, and blamed me. I was 12 years old. Then she laughed at me. Well, folks, if Hillary Clinton prevails on Election Day, our liberties, freedom of speech, more taxation, a health care nightmare, unborn children, a tsunami of Muslim immigration, which will be impossible to vent, all of this will be reality within the first 4 years of a Hillary Clinton administration. This is a woman who claims that Donald Trump is unfit to be president. And yet this is the same woman that laughed at a 12-year-old rape victim. Laughed. Laughed when the DNA evidence was compromised. Therefore, it would not be possible to tie Taylor to the crime. This is the same woman that deleted 33,000 emails, over 150 of those were classified, and then lied to an FBI director and an FBI investigation. This is the same woman that wants to be the president of the United States, and now you understand why Hillary and the liberal radical left will do everything in their power to discredit Donald Trump, because their agenda, which is one of the things in the WikiLeaks email leaks, one of their agendas is to revolutionize the Catholic Church for gender equality. Translate that, they want the homosexual agenda to be a reality within the Catholic Church. There are several things in these email leaks that shows how the media was in collusion with her battle against Bernie Sanders, with the things she did, with the announcement of what was happening in the email investigation, ties to the Department of Justice. The list goes on and on. And this is something horrendous. This is the woman that wants to be the commander-in-chief. And again, what happens to our rights? What happens to our freedoms? We have a responsibility. That very powerful and personal vote we can make on November 8th. And when you go to vote, please remember one thing in particular. This is a woman who cannot be trusted, who lies. This is a woman who compromised our national security. This is a woman that wants to lead this country because it's all about Hillary. It's not about you. It's not about me. It's not about our economy. It's not about our national security. It's not about any of those issues. What it's about in the end, it's an agenda to continue the Obama agenda of corrupting, reducing the United States to a nothing in the world. No national security. Our borders will be open borders for whomever Hillary believes should be a part of our country. Universal open borders. And this is what we are facing. This is one of the most serious, important elections of our lifetime. Honesty, truth will be sacrificed on the altar of Hillary Clinton and the bombastic, radical left's liberal agenda. I want to welcome right now to the Cross in the Desert a very, very special person. Her name is Becky Noble, and she is my wife. And welcome to the Cross in the Desert, Becky.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, Becky, you've been on the program before, but for the sake of our new listeners, just give a little bit about it, your background and the things that you do.
Well, I have my own blog. It's called The Conservative Cauldron, and you can find that at theconservativecauldron.blogspot.com. I also write for a website called Politichicks. It's politichicks.com. And I have my own radio show right here on Blog Talk Radio on Friday mornings, Conservative Cauldron Radio. It's on at 11 a.m. Central Time, and you can catch that, like I said, right here on Blog Talk Radio on Fridays. And it is also carried on Red Nation Rising Radio Network. It is on, it's replayed on Red Nation Rising Radio Network at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday evening, and then again on Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m. Eastern. And you can find that at www.rednationrising.us.
Excellent, excellent. You are out there being a voice for hope and freedom in our country. Well, Becky, I want to get right to the subject here today. I've been playing the sound bites from the second debate. I felt that Donald Trump made the case that he exposed Hillary Clinton. But I want to talk about just about the situation he's in starting today. I want us to talk about the absolute betrayal of the Republican Party not supporting Donald Trump, walking away when it's so important to be a voice, to be a participant in stopping Hillary Clinton from accomplishing her absolute radical liberal agenda. And this morning, of course, there's new information that two more women have spoken up about alleged crimes of Donald Trump inappropriately touching them, walking into the locker room of beauty pageants when they're undressed, all kinds of rhetoric. But this is the only thing, Becky, that they have. They have no substance. They have no answers for our country's problems. All they have is smear campaigns and muds. So I want you to speak to the heart today about what's going on and how Donald Trump is standing up against a very elite establishment media that is doing everything they can to stop him. Speak to us this morning your thoughts about what's happening and how Donald Trump can survive this entourage.
Well, here's the thing, is that Donald Trump is not just running against Hillary Clinton. Like you said, he is running against Hillary Clinton. He's running against the liberal Democrat establishment, and he's running against his own party. He's running against Republicans. He's running against the Republican establishment. And actually, when you talk about when you use that word establishment, you're not just talking about just Republicans or just Democrats. You're talking about the whole lot of them, the whole group of them, because they all kind of feed off each other. And it's getting to the point where there's no difference anymore, because when you look at people that you would categorize as, quote, establishment Republicans, who do you think of? You think of Speaker of the House Paul Ryan. You think of Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. You think of all the highest ranking, having been there the longest, Republicans. And the thing with it is, and I think Mike Huckabee said it best the other night on Fox News, is that all these people, be it Democrats or Republicans, they're not afraid that Donald Trump's going to lose. They're afraid he's going to win. Because if he wins, you're looking at somebody who is not a career politician, who has not spent their entire life in Washington, D.C. And if he does what he says he's going to do, he's going to go into Washington if he's elected, and he's going to shake things up, and he's going to shake things up in a big way. And he is going to threaten their way of life. He's going to threaten that power structure and that money structure and that elitism structure that they live by. And you know, I think Rush Limbaugh kind of described it best the other day when he said that when you look at these establishment people, they're not like you or I. They live their life in a way that everything that they do, everything that they say, everything that they're involved in, it revolves around whether or not it's going to elect them or reelect them. They, you know, when Hillary Clinton is talking about Donald Trump's tax returns and why he hasn't released them, these people, this gang of elites, they structure their tax returns. They structure their job. They structure their opportunities. They structure their personal relationships. Their whole entire, everything that they do is based on whether or not it's going to elect them or reelect them. It's how they live their lives. And so they're not like me and you. Every normal average American has a past. We all have certain things in our lives that we have done that maybe we're not too proud of. And that's because humans are imperfect. And I've been saying a lot over the past week or so since this tape came out from 2005 that when somebody decides that they're going to run for president, they better start doing so at about age 12 and live their life accordingly, because somebody is going to go back that far, if not further, to try to dig up dirt on them. And again, let's face it, we all have things in our past that we don't want people to know about. But when you're talking about this level, it doesn't matter.
In fact, I was playing a tape just before you came on of Hillary Clinton laughing at a 12-year-old rape victim circumstance. She laughed at the fact that the DNA evidence had been compromised. She laughed at the fact that he passed the polygraph and put her faith in just the comments she made about laughing. So this is a woman that is determined at all costs, Becky, to win this election, but not on substance, not on being a level-headed commander-in-chief, but on smear tactics and destroying people. And I will say to you, like I've said to all of my friends at that debate on Sunday, Donald Trump, under all of the pressure, made the case that the real war against women is not him, but Bill and Hillary Clinton is the true war against women.
Oh, absolutely. And the thing about this 12-year-old girl, her name is Kathy Shelton. She's now in her 50s, I guess. But at the time of this assault, she was so brutally raped that she has been all of her life, she's unable to have children. That's how bad this attack was on her. And, right, you can hear Hillary Clinton on a tape laughing about having gotten this monster off who attacked her. And, you know, for all of Hillary Clinton's wanting to portray herself and position herself as a champion of women's rights, well, it's well documented that the Clinton Foundation takes money from places like Saudi Arabia, from Qatar, from any place in the Middle East that treats women as second-class citizens. So if she's such a champion for women's rights, why is the Clinton Foundation taking so much money from them? And when they take money, it's almost like they're buying her silence, because has anybody ever heard Hillary Clinton criticize any of these nations and any of their leaders? No, and you're not going to hear that, because, again, it's silence money. It's hush money.
And it's documented well. I think the Beacon did a report on this. 38% of and this is the Clinton Foundation, men are paid 38% more than women in the Clinton Foundation. When she was in the Senate, women were paid less in the Senate. Wherever Hillary goes,
women are
discriminated against.
Right. In her Senate office, she paid women less than men who worked on her staff in her Senate office. And also, I believe, I could be mistaken, but I think the same went on during her tenure as Secretary of State as well. And, you know, here's the thing, and it surprises me that nobody has talked about this. Let's look at these two candidates, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. If Donald Trump loses the election, what's he going to do the next day? What is Donald Trump going to do on November the 9th? You know what Donald Trump is going to do? Donald Trump is going to go back to his life. Donald Trump is going to go back to a loving wife, fantastic children, a very, very successful business. He's going to go back to his life. What's Hillary Clinton going to do? Her whole life has been structured around, and again, it all goes back to structuring your life about being elected and reelected. Her whole life has been a run-up to November the 8th. What is she going to do if she loses? What's she going to do the next day? There, you know, it's a very stark contrast, not just on the issues, but this is her life. This campaign and running for this office and getting it by any means necessary is her life. And it really surprises me that no one has brought up that fact.
Well, in fact, you have been successful in writing some key blogs on Hillary and Bill Clinton, and you have shown that the Clinton name automatically guarantees that the rule of law doesn't apply to me, doesn't apply to Hillary, and the Clinton good name has gotten them out of such drastic situations because of the Clinton name. And so, therefore, I think the American people, 67% can't trust her. They've said so in a poll. The American people are tired of them living above the law when any of us would be in jail.
Exactly, and I said it too, is that I think that Donald Trump represents a mindset for a lot of people. And when I say that, I mean that he is the first Republican with any sort of, well, let's say stones, who is willing to take on the Clintons and call them out on all of their shenanigans. But he's also representative of, like you just said, of millions of Americans who, if you're old enough to remember, you know, back during the Bill Clinton's presidency in the 90s, and even maybe further back than that when he was governor of Arkansas, all of the scandal, there was constant, chronic scandal surrounding the Clintons, be it Whitewater, be it the death of Vince Foster, be it the cattle futures, be it Jennifer Flowers. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on. And I think that Donald Trump represents someone who will finally stop the Clintons in their tracks, and he represents the idea of millions of Americans who have watched the Clintons almost literally get away with murder for 30-plus years, and they're so tired of it. And I think that's there's a lot of reasons why Donald Trump is where he is, and I think that's probably one of them.
I wanted to go now to the strategy that Donald Trump must utilize in order to surge in the lead and overcome these criticisms, these scandals against him. In a Real Clear Politics poll, just as we were going to air, in the general election, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are tied at 44%. That is a drastic difference than all of these other polls that have Hillary Clinton with an 11-point lead, NBC poll, New York Times poll. All of these polls are skewed. And we had a conversation last night. When you see the number of people at Donald Trump's rallies, unprecedented numbers compared to the dwindling few at Hillary Clinton, and then you look at the polls, you know something is wrong. Because those numbers of people at the rally should translate into a larger lead. So you and I were talking about this, that the way these polls are conducted, most of them, they're not sampling enough of the people, and they're skewed. Because as I mentioned, Real Clear Politics, a very reliable poll, has it tied. So with all of that in mind, Becky, what does Donald Trump need to do to overcome this and surge in the lead and take this election?
Well, here's the thing, is that because he is running against the mainstream media, and we've learned through all of these WikiLeaks dumps that the mainstream media, and when I say mainstream media, maybe for people who aren't familiar with the what's the word I'm looking for? The if you're not up on what on who the media really is and what they do, at this point they're just they're the propaganda arm of the Democrat Party. And I think that anytime you're within the next from now until the election, anytime that you see a bump in Donald Trump's poll numbers, they're going to do something to slap that down. Well, whether it be, you know, some other woman coming forward and saying that he touched them inappropriately, or, you know, whatever it is, pick a category. Whenever they see a bump in those polls, they're going to find something else that they're going to bring out to slap it down. And so I think probably what does he have to do? Well, I would agree with some people who say that maybe his base, the people who are going to vote for him no matter what, that's solidified. And I think maybe what the idea of the Democrats and the media is to get at this point, I don't know how anybody could still be on the fence, but as always, there's always people right up until the morning of the election, from the minute they walk into that voting booth, who are on the fence. And I think it's probably a good portion of people who may still be on the fence about, because this election is just, let's face it, it's like no other election we've ever seen in our lifetime.
That's right.
So I think that's one of the things he does need to do, is try to overcome all of these, you know, outrageous things that they're going to try to bring out anytime he gets a bump in the poll numbers, because that's what you want to do. You want to bring on those independents. But as far as poll numbers, don't believe them. Don't believe them, because the thing. You and I, and maybe people who aren't familiar don't know, you can make a poll say anything you want it to say. And when I say that, you can skew what the sort of people that you are polling and who you're not polling. You can ask the questions a certain way. There's a million things that you can do in order to make that poll say that you want to say it. And I can give you a little a story of someone that I know through political circles apparently he's had several pollsters call him and want to know about his preferences in the election. And when I first heard this story, I was kind of like, well, who's calling you? Because nobody's called me to poll me. But apparently this has happened to this friend of mine several times, and he said he kind of plays with the pollsters a little bit and changes it up a little bit. One time, you know, he may tell them he's a Republican. The other time he'll tell them they're a Democrat. The next time he'll tell them he's an independent. He said a couple of times he told them, you know, I guess they ask if you're black or white or Hispanic or whatever. He's told them that he was black or Hispanic, or so he kind of switches it up and kind of messes with the pollsters a little bit. So there's your first clue that polls aren't always what you think they are.
He said
that the minute that he tells a pollster that he's a Republican, they hang up on him. He said in his own words, he said that tells me right there that they're undersampling Republicans. They're doing it on purpose.
Oh, I agree.
So
yes. Well, I wanted to just shift here for a second. We have the latest revelation from the WikiLeaks, which really shows the kind of person and candidate that Hillary Clinton really is. And some of the conversations that she's had, and you can tell in these WikiLeaks just how she's been catered to by the media, how the Department of Justice has communicated with her, and on and on and on. Might Donald Trump use these WikiLeaks to continue to prosecute the case of how incompetent Hillary is?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think he should. I mean, all of these things, I mean, if these are emails that are coming directly from people in the Clinton campaign, then by all means, absolutely, because you want to portray just exactly what kind of person Hillary Clinton is. And I think he needs to split his time. And when I say that, what I mean is that absolutely talk about the issues that are affecting the lives of everyday Americans. Talk about the economy. Talk about terrorism. Talk about jobs. Talk about all those things. But in addition to that, because those are the things that affect, like I said, that affect people's everyday lives that they want to know about. But you also have to illustrate what kind of person Hillary Clinton is and what she will do. There's nothing that she won't do in order to get elected. Because, again, it all goes back – actually, it all goes back to November 9th. What is she going to do if she loses on November
yes.
the 9th?
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of the things the WikiLeaks points out is how committed Hillary is to the universal idea of open borders. Now, for many people, including you and me, this election is about a national security crisis. It's a national security election. I think Donald Trump, to his advantage, should exploit this idea of universal open borders to show just how dangerous it will be under a Hillary administration.
Oh, absolutely. And I think border security is every other issue that is an issue in this election. It's all tied to national security, because if you have unending streams, and I think there's very, very few people who are going to tell you that they're absolutely anti-immigrant, legal or illegal. We want people to come here and live the American dream and achieve the things that they want to achieve and create a better life, not just for themselves, but for their families and for their children. But what we don't want is people sneaking in. And our southern border, our border with Mexico, it is no secret around the world how porous it is, because border agents have found prayer rugs on the southern border. They've found copies of the Quran on the southern border. So it's no secret. And I think that if people really know that that's what she stands for, and we already know that she wants a huge increase, about 550% increase in the number of Syrian refugees that are brought to this country. Well, how are we going to vet those people? How are we going to know exactly who they are, why they're coming here, and if they're willing to assimilate? If they don't want to come here just to work or just to get away from a civil war, but they want to come here to become Americans. How are we going to know all that? Mm-hmm. The answer to that is we're not. We're not going to know.
In one of the WikiLeaks emails on the side, in her private time, Hillary admits it's impossible to vet these Syrians.
Exactly, and that all goes back to her statement about that she made during a speech, I believe it was maybe to a bunch of people from Goldman Sachs. I could be wrong, it could be someplace else. But that she stated basically that you had to have a private position on certain things and a public position.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's dishonest right there. That's dishonest.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to just jump in here for a second, because it just occurred to me as we're wrapping things up here with our time running out. You were in the process of, I think, writing a blog, or you had written a blog about an issue of friendship in this election, how so many people are willing to slay you if you don't agree with their political position. And I think in your blog that you were writing is that friendship should transcend politics. But talk about how aggressive people are being if you don't vote for Hillary Clinton, if you're a Donald Trump supporter.
Well, I mean, there's been reports all over about people being beaten at rallies and having things thrown at them, and, you know, really, really extreme things that you know, the left loves to portray themselves as so open and so tolerant and so open-minded, and nothing could be further from the truth. They will tell you that they want to hear all viewpoints, but they really don't. All they want to hear is their own viewpoint. And I'm working on something right now. Hopefully it'll be on up on politichicks.com by next week, about people. This is another reason that this election cycle is like no other, and that, yeah, everybody has, you know, in past presidential elections or midterm elections, whatever, that, you know, you have discussions with friends and family members. And you might agree or disagree, and you may debate and discuss, and it might get a little heated, but in the end, everybody's friends again. Not in this case. It seems that, in fact, people are doing surveys about it, that there is, you know, a lot of people who will tell you that they've ended friendships over this election, over this presidential election and these candidates. And that's mind-boggling to me, because I don't agree with all of my friends on politics or anything else, but they're still my friends, because, you know, at bottom line, this is America, and you're entitled to your opinion, whatever it is. And it really is amazing how many people will tell you that they've ended friendships over this.
We are in a war. We are in a war, and it looks like Election Day is going to be the most important, the biggest event in the life of you and I and many millions. One more time, when can we get in touch with you? Tell us about your next broadcast.
Conservative Cauldron Radio will be on tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. Central Time on Blog Talk Radio. It is rebroadcast again tomorrow evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Red Nation Rising Radio Network, and again on Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Red Nation Rising Radio Network, www.rednationrising.us. Please check it out.
Yes, and so that's where you can hear my wife, the intelligent lady of my life who is committed to the conservative principles. And by the way, she writes some excellent blogs. I've had an opportunity to read them here on The Cross in the Desert. Thank you so much, Becky. Thank you for coming on The Cross in the Desert and illuminating and educating us. And we'll listen to your program tomorrow morning, 11 a.m., The Conservative Cauldron.
Thank you very much.
And have a great day. Well, and it's just a pleasure to have Becky on here and her insights into politics. Now, she is the political person of the family. I'm more of the theological Christian novel writing person, and I learn a lot from her. She really knows how to educate and inform us, very passionate about what she does. It's been a really interesting morning here on The Cross in the Desert. We've looked at some very serious issues in Iran. Please continue to keep Asiya Bibi in your prayers. A delay in this court case, I don't know what will happen next. She really needs our prayer support, our thoughts. We continue to send out petitions to urge the Pakistani government to free her. She is being unjustly held simply really because she's a Christian. And please keep Zainab, the Iranian child bride, in your prayers as well. She is also on death row and could be executed any day. The injustices against women continue in this world, and I pledge with my program to continue to be a voice for these people. I'm going to do what Hillary Clinton fails to do. With all of her money, fame, and fortune and corruption, it doesn't matter. I will be the voice that she needs to be with all of her influence. It's been a pleasure being your voice this morning on The Cross in the Desert, and I will see you again on Monday at 9:30 a.m. I'm always interested in your comments and questions. Please leave them at my Facebook page and my message box. I always like to know what you're thinking. And if you have some stories you think I should have on the program, please let me know. God bless you. Have yourself an incredible weekend, and I will see you again on Monday on The Cross in the Desert.
Great of wrath our souls.